Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. President Obama's cabinet nominees include another Citigroup man for Treasury who backed the creation of NAFTA and the deregulation of banks and has never admitted wrongdoing or apologized, a torture supporter and an architect of the kill list for CIA director, a pro-war Republican for the Pentagon, albeit one under attack by neocons and the corporate media for his insufficient eagerness to attack Iran, and a pro-war Democrat and opponent of international law for the State Department. Let's put all of these into some context. I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics and the chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Stephen Zunis, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Great to be on.
It's terrific to have you. I've been in recent weeks wanting to hear some sort of response from people to the idea that John Kerry should get a promotion and be our Secretary of State, and you've authored a terrific one that I think people should read. But tell us what your thinking is on John Kerry as a U.S. Secretary of State nominee.
Well, there are a number of things that I believe are reasons for concern. His spurious attacks on the International Court of Justice, his unqualified defense of Israeli occupation policies and human rights violations, his support for the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq, all these and more raise serious questions about his commitment to international law and treaty obligations. And then, of course, there's the matter of his false claims about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction and his repeated denial of well-documented evidence of human rights abuses by allied government, and that raised serious questions about his credibility.
If he had gone along with or fallen for or otherwise been a part of the push for the attack on Iraq in 2003, but then clearly apologized and regretted and opposed his earlier decision, would that make a dramatic difference? Is the problem in large part that he famously said he still would have supported the war even if he had known then what he knew now?
Yeah, that's probably the most disturbing aspect of it altogether, whereas some people who initially voted for the war resolution, such as Chuck Hagel, quickly reversed themselves when they had a clear idea of what the reality was and what was really going on. Kerry seems to double down, though in more recent years he has expressed regrets. I think perhaps this is a reflection of the shift in public opinion, but when he was running for president in 2004, he was saying that he would have voted for the war, even if he had known Iraq was not a threat currently and didn't have these so-called weapons of mass destruction, on the grounds that Iraq had the potential of making them someday and it was an oppressive government. Now, if you look at all the countries in the world that are capable of making chemical and biological weapons and have repressive governments, we're talking about, depending on how you measure it, 20, 30, 40 countries. And then basically, Kerry was saying that we should have the right to unilaterally invade them all. And this, and he made repeated statements during the campaign that we will not let the United Nations tell us what we can or can't do to defend ourselves. Well, the United Nations has never, ever interfered or opposed a country's right to legitimate self-defense. But the UN Charter is pretty clear that you cannot engage in aggressive wars of the kind that we saw in Iraq. So, what he's saying is that somehow the United States is above the law, that, we don't have to abide by these well-established international legal standards that we insist that other countries abide by.
It seems rather a common opinion in Washington, sadly. I mean, are there a lot of nominees for cabinet positions, or even senators for that matter, who oppose that view?
Well, at the time of the Iraq War vote, majority of Democrats nationally, according to polls, opposed the war. And this was reflected on Capitol Hill, where a majority of the members of Congress who were in the Democratic Party voted against the war. There was a fairly sizable majority in the House of Representatives. Only 21 Democrats voted against it in the Senate. But, you know, total number left the pro-war people like Kerry definitely in the minority among Democrats on Capitol Hill. What's disturbing about Obama's appointments, not just of Kerry, but of some of his other appointments, is that when he ran for president in 2008, he ran by saying that that he would not only end the war in Iraq, he would end the mindset that led to the Iraq war in the first place. And it was a distinction he made between himself, who spoke out against the war, even spoke at an anti-war rally in Chicago in October of 2002. At the same time, Hillary Clinton was parroting the Bush line and voting to authorize the invasion. He pointed out this difference between him and Hillary Clinton. That proved decisive in their close primary battle. Indeed, there's no way that Obama would be president right now had he not distinguished himself by his anti-war position. And yet, upon becoming president, the overwhelming majority of his appointments to top positions dealing with national security and foreign policy have been among this right-wing minority of Democrats that supported Bush's war. In addition to Kerry, we had Robert Gates. We had Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. We had Vice President Joe Biden, Janet Napolitano at Homeland Security, Dennis Blair, Director of National Intelligence. We've had Rahm Emanuel, Chief of Staff. I mean, you go down the list, and it appears that this mindset that he said he would get rid of is very much alive.
Indeed. Does this sort of speak to the importance and the power of primaries in elections, in that it was clear to all of those senators, Clinton and Kerry and Obama, had he been there in time, it seems his fortune was not to be in the Senate soon enough, because once he got there, he was able to vote to fund the war while being a critic of the war.
There were a number of people who did oppose, who were in the Senate and House, who opposed the
who lacked presidential ambitions.
Later approved funding. I think that what's disturbing about Obama is that at least when he was running back in 2008, if you look at his core of foreign policy advisors, the majority, not all of them, the majority, while very much part of the foreign policy establishment, seem to be younger, more innovative people who opposed the war, in contrast to Clinton's foreign policy team, which were mostly veterans of her husband's administration, who tend to be a lot more hawkish. And yet when you see who's actually gotten positions in the Obama administration, he's relied much more on Hillary's people, much more on the more hawkish Democrats, and not the people that many people expected him to put in these high positions based on his advisors and the people he had worked with prior to coming to the White House.
Oh, I wish I had had those nice expectations. I never did. But what do you make of some of his other nominees at this point, including Chuck Hagel and including John Brennan? Is there a big contrast between the rest of them and Hagel, or is he one of the same crowd?
Chuck Hagel is an interesting choice. I mean, I think it shows just how far to the right that the discourse has become in Washington now, that someone like Hagel, who would have fit in quite comfortably in the cabinet of President Bush Sr., who's very much of a mainstream conservative Republican, is considered too far to the left, not just by today's Republicans, but by a number of Democrats and other pundits as well. Here's someone who is comparable to, say, James Baker or other people of that tradition, that basically we're cold warriors, are pretty hawkish people, but we're pragmatic enough to recognize that the war in Iraq was a bad idea, that a war on Iran would be an even worse idea, that the Pentagon, like other parts of government, are going to need to be cut back. They take a position that while U.S. support for Israel's right to exist and peace and security is non-negotiable, giving a blank check for provocative actions that only stir up anti-Western resentment and ultimately put Israel's long-term interests and, by extension, the United States' interests at risk should be challenged. Again, pretty mainstream, commonsensical kinds of things, even from a traditional realpolitik, moderate conservative position. But that is considered left-wing nowadays in Washington. So in certain ways, the fact that Obama is sticking, is sticking with this nomination and pushing it does send something of a signal that he's not going to kowtow to the neoconservatives and the far right, and I suppose that's a good thing. But at the same time, let's not pretend that Hegel's any kind of progressive.
The trend you point out is an astonishing one of the movement to the right in both parties and across the politics in Washington. But do you also see a trend in recent years and decades of movement toward cabinet secretaries being openly servants of the president? And if so, to what extent does it matter whether it's Hegel or someone else, or Kerry or someone else? Are they not going to take direction from Obama?
Well, it depends very much on the president. Some presidents have taken stronger leadership than others, and it depends, of course, on the particular cabinet office, how much knowledge or strong opinions the president may have on that particular area, and it depends on how important the area it may be. For example, he did give a Secretary of State Clinton a huge amount of leeway relative to most Secretary of State in recent history. There are some areas that were considered pretty vital in terms of national security where the president has taken the lead, including Iran, for example. But there have been so-called lesser issues where the White House initially signaled a fairly moderate position, and the state taking a more hawkish position, and they ended up deferring to state. And that included things like the 2009 coup in Honduras, on the Western Sahara conflict, a couple other areas where it seemed the Clinton's people ended up winning out in alliance with Gates and the Defense Department. So it seems like Obama is willing to give at least some greater leeway to his cabinet officials than some presidents have on some issues. But ultimately, of course, the buck does stop at the Oval Office, and that there will be pretty clear parameters within which any cabinet secretary is going to be able to work.
So it ought to matter to us, to some extent, who is Secretary of State, and we ought to see liberals, progressives, opposing the nomination of John Kerry, I would think, given your analysis of his history, not perhaps decades gone by, but during the past decade as a pro-war.
First elected in the 1980s, and into the 90s, he was fairly progressive. He opposed the U.S. policy in Central America, was the most hard-hitting member of the Iran-Contra Committee, and challenging Reagan and his crowd. He voted against the first Gulf War. He supported the nuclear freeze. But he seems to have swung well to the right. Now, there's disagreement as whether this represented an ideological shift or whether it was a political expediency, because he wanted to become president. Though, ironically, it was his support for the Iraq War which ultimately cost him the presidency, because not only did he alienate a lot of people who might have otherwise been excited about his candidacy to sit it out, enabling Bush's narrow win in 2004, but also, if he had voted against it, the debate, foreign policy debate, that fall would have been whether invading Iraq was or was not a good idea. And by that time, public opinion was starting to go against it. And instead, it became about Kerry's alleged flip-flopping. But whether or not it actually served his interest or not, there's a line of thinking that says, oh, this is a... he just did this for expediency. It was wasn't right. It ended up hurting him. But he, in his heart, he's actually more like the Kerry of old. My view, however, is that if you look at the implications of some of these positions he's taken, regarding the Iraq War and its justification, it really does look at this. Does take a kind of unilateralist view that just totally disregards the UN Charter, indeed much of 20th century international law. And some of the positions he's taken around Israel and Palestine, it's not just your kind of typical knee-jerk Capitol Hill, support whatever the Israeli government does kind of thing. But, for example, his attacks on the World Court's decision that Israel, like all countries, has to abide by the Fourth Geneva Convention and other aspects of international humanitarian law. I mean, this is a 14-1 decision. Only the U.S. judge dissented, and that was largely on a technicality. And he just blasted the court, saying, oh, what happens in the West Bank should be up to Israeli court, not the world court. And this is, think about the implications of that. He's saying that an occupying power should have legal jurisdiction over territory seized by military force. That's a rather scary concept when you think about it. Think about Kuwait occupying, Iraq occupying Kuwait, or South Africa occupying Namibia, or Indonesia occupying Timor, Morocco occupying Western Sahara. The World Court did weigh in on Namibia and Western Sahara. It was not a bias against Israel. It was a very a decision. It was quite consistent with what they've done before. But Kerry's view is that essentially supporting the right of conquest, that occupying powers can decide what's legitimate and what's illegitimate, and the International Court of Justice and United Nations and any other international entity that deals with these kind of international legal issues just butt out. That's kind of scary, actually, when you think about the broader implications.
It's extremely disturbing. We are speaking with Stephen Zunis, who is the chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. What about another nominee, Stephen, John Brennan? What does his, who like Kerry, is not facing the same sort of pushback from the neocons as Hegel had been?
Well, the thing about Brennan is that he essentially has embraced the kind of neocon view that torture and other extraordinary measures are somehow legal if done in the name of counterterrorism. Indeed, when Brennan's name was first floated to be CIA director back in 2008, it was blocked by popular protest from constitutional
support
lawyers,
for torture.
Others, they basically say, why are we doing bringing a supportive torture into this kind of position? And the fact that Obama suddenly felt the confidence to nominate him anyway, again, is indicative of where the discourse has gone. That rather than getting better in the past 4 years, the climate seems to have gotten worse. That he feels emboldened enough to push this nomination forward.
It's incredibly disturbing. This at the same time that the president has legalized 5 more years of warrantless spying and infinite years of indefinite detention, and torture has become a policy choice, something we prosecute whistleblowers over, but not those participating in it. Where is this administration taking us in terms of civil liberties and the war the ongoing war on everywhere that's used to justify these restrictions?
I think what we've seen is basically is a bipartisan endorsement of this idea of American unilateralism, that, again, somehow the country is above the law. I think that in certain areas, I do believe that Obama may be trying to, at best, return to the realpolitik of a previous administration, and he's rejecting at least some of the neoconservative agenda. I think the Hagel nomination reflects that, and I do believe that, despite my very strong criticisms of Kerry, that he would likely be an improvement over Hillary Clinton at state. But we shouldn't be having this debate between a modified conservative realist view and this scary neoconservative view. We need to be starting to ask the big questions, not just about radical changes, which I think many of us believe we need, but even kind of basic mid 20th century liberalism, the kind of thing of the post World War II international order. I mean, as someone who had hoped for more fundamental changes in American society and politics for so many years, it's disappointing that we are struggling simply to save the liberalism of our parents' generation, and it seems to be a losing battle with some of these nominations and some of these positions that even a Democratic president is bringing forward now. So I think what we really need to do is to, on the one hand, recognize there is a difference between Obama and the Republicans in some important ways, and even Obama and some of the more hawkish Democrats, like Hillary Clinton and some of the others. But at the same time, even though a small difference can make a big difference among millions of people, and that's why I'm glad that Obama got reelected instead of Romney, we also need to say that, let's not just assume this is enough. We got to really fight this. Yes, Kerry is going to sweep, is going to get his nomination confirmed really clearly. But we do need to be making noise about this. Why did Kerry say that all experts agree that Iraq had an active nuclear weapons program? Well, the International Atomic Energy Agency, academic journals, and many people within the CIA were saying, hey, this is not really the case. I mean, how can you get away with lying like that? I mean, he even said that Iraq's chemical and biological weapons and delivery systems were more advanced than they were before the Gulf War of 1991. Again, that was totally ridiculous. Where did he come up with that? Why is he refusing to let anybody see the supposed evidence supposedly said this kind of thing? I mean, why aren't we challenging him on these lies? Why aren't we challenging on his view that the United States has the right to invade a country on the far side of the world that's no threat to us at the time and circumstances of a president's choosing? These are pretty critical issues, but I'm afraid we're not going to hear these kinds of questions when Kerry comes before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the committee that he has chaired for the past several years and been a member of. For the better part of the past 30 years. And if members of Congress aren't going to raise these issues, the American people need to.
Which raises the question of what we should be doing. There are liberals pushing for Paul Krugman for Treasury Secretary and against Chuck Hagel. For Chuck Hagel. Sadly, I get so confused now with this Republican for Secretary of Defense, and fairly quiet about John Kerry. But is this all sort of inside baseball, and would we be better off sticking to pushing for the policies we want, including denouncing the very similar lies that are moving us toward a possible war with Iran?
I think it's important to have both an inside and outside game. I think on balance, there are proportionally we need more of the outside game. That I certainly don't have disagreements with progressives who to some degree feel they need to work within the system on pro or against specific nominees and sign letters and lobby Congress and that kind of thing. That's good and important. But I think even more so, we need to be making a lot of noise saying, hey, this is a bigger issue than this. This is, we really, really, really need to start asking big questions about, you know, why is America taking this kind of role in the world? Why is Kerry and even Hegel even considered, you know, to be, you know, liberal and left when by almost any objective measure they are embracing positions that I think a lot of people would have considered extreme only a few years ago. This is the kind of thing that we really do need to be making a lot of noise about this and educating people. And that's why I hope my article in Kerry gets a wider circulation, because I really haven't seen anybody else raise these kinds of issues, at least in the kind of detail that I've been putting out.
Quick, I think related question, maybe off topic, don't know if it's your area, but it seems that when these nominees are put forward, any sort of unethical or disreputable behavior from their past can be dragged out and considered. And John Kerry, according to various reports, was aware that so-called narrow victory for Bush in 2004 was stolen from him in Ohio. And Chuck Hagel was elected on voting machines owned and managed by a company owned and managed by Chuck Hagel, which is at least carries a certain appearance of impropriety. Are such concerns relevant, and why is there silence about them from all quarters?
I don't know enough about either of those, you know, frankly, to comment on them. I think really what is most important is to push the issues and what they represent, because the fact that Kerry is the nominee for Secretary of State, and Hagel is the nominee for Secretary of Defense, and the fact that is seen as a generally a positive thing by progressives is disturbing to me, because it is ignoring some of the positions that they have taken, particularly Kerry, I think really we need to be focusing the discussion on.
Well said. We've been speaking with Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics and the chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Stephen, thank you for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
My pleasure.
To let your senators know whether they should confirm or reject cabinet nominees, please visit rootsaction.org, where you can also help to ban weaponized drones from the world and push for reductions in Pentagon spending rather than in Social Security and Medicare. You can also urge the Senate to end the minority rule created by the filibuster, by ending the filibuster, not by making us all listen to the senators employing it. That's rootsaction.org. For upcoming events around the country, go to warisacrime.org and click on events. This weekend and Monday in Washington, D.C., there is a wide array of events planned. The beginnings, one hopes, of a possible long-needed resistance to empire and injustice with a pretty face and a Democratic Party label. Honor Martin Luther King on Monday, not the rise of four-year kings in our former republic. It's also 3 years since the notorious Citizens United ruling that put wealth firmly in control of our former elections. The time to push back before it's too late is right now. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. All past shows can be found at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.